Have a dope day.
Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Welcome to the Truth to Power Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm your host, VJR Nathan, and with us today is the co-host, Claire Ben Winkle.
Good morning.
Rockaway Writers Workshop, and Tony Georges.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, so Tony, we met at the meditation class like 10 years ago, right?
It has been that long. Yeah. Actually, it might have been even longer, because I'm thinking about it, and like I've just been on Facebook now for 10 years and 2 weeks, I think it is, or something ridiculous like that. And I'm looking at what was going on back then, and I think I already knew you at that point.
Yeah, I remember I started with the meditation class just when I started with Queen's Library. So 2007, I started with Queen's Library full time. Right, so it might be 2006, 2007. And then I started going to class, and we met there. And we some of the career questions, you describe yourself as a anarchist, atheist, Buddhist.
Yeah, I'm a Buddhist, anarchist, atheist. I'm a few other things too, but you know,
a few other ists.
I try to, like I said before, I try to stay away from isms because once you get into isms, that's when everything goes to hell. But I try to be realistic about all of it. I'm Buddhist in the fact that all of the philosophies and all the symbolism works completely for me. I can fix myself, but I'm an atheist. I don't believe in gods or spirits or fairies or unicorns or any of that stuff. I mean, even the Buddhist concepts of, because people throw the reincarnation thing at me all the time. And you will know from the teachings we had together, I personally dislike the word reincarnation.
Yeah.
Because it literally means, you know, incarnate, carne meaning meat.
Yeah. You know? Put back in the meat.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is, you know? And rebirth is what we always used. And that, because you can be born as anything philosophically, you know, or spiritually, if you want to use that word. But I actually try to stay away from that word because I'm not what I would call spiritual. Yeah. Music to me is the closest thing to what I define as spirituality.
Yeah.
But Buddhism works on every level and it's helped me control my own mind, which then can in turn help other people if I can control my own shit. I'm allowed to say that now.
Yes, you are. You are.
I was saying I have to censor myself sometimes for another radio show I'm on. So I like this fucking shit. All right. Yeah.
There you go. First time ever.
Soraya, if you heard that, I'm allowed to say it.
All right. I also like the re-becoming because it's like we're every moment, every time, we're like dying and re-becoming.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. And I see rebirth as more of a scientific point of view. I'm a science guy. I've always been a science guy, you know, and that is what drove me away from Christianity. I'm a confirmed Catholic, and I was always the, you know, Adam and Eve, that doesn't, you know, okay, well, shush, you know, okay, dinosaurs, shush, you know. I'm a confirmed Catholic. I'm an adult in the eyes of the Catholic Church. You must answer these questions for me now. They're like, you have to have blind faith. I was like, see ya.
Yeah.
And it took me years of looking at stuff before I found Buddhism. And I used to say to people, I'm not religious, I'm agnostic, and I don't really care. But if somebody held a gun to my head and said you had to choose a religion, I'd either pick Buddhism or Wicca. Because the symbolisms they make sense, and it just all makes sense, you know? I don't see the hatred and the misogyny and the rules for rape and things like that go along with so many of the Abrahamic religions. That's what drove me away. And don't get me wrong, most of my family and friends are in some way, shape, or form Jewish or Christian. Or today's Happy Rosh Hashanah, if anybody's Jewish. Yeah. But it's, to me, that whole religion thing is sort of like the religion is the cancer, you know. I hate the cancer, but I don't hate the victim.
Well, I think it's interesting because if you look at religions, pagan religions, or I guess in terms of paganism, a lot of them would be sort of spiritual practices instead of religions. But I think there's a huge difference between religions that were sort of built around an institution that was meant to also be government. Like if you look at the Bible, so much of it is about how society should be organized. If you look at Old Testament rules. And the rules and things like that, And it's strange because I think we sometimes forget that those are the origins of these institutional religions. So we're in this country that separates church and state, and yet the most popular mainstream religions come from sort of a tradition of using religion to create rules for society. Yeah.
I had that argument with my uncle, who he's pretty open-minded liberal guy, you know, mm-hmm. but he still considers himself a Catholic, although he can't explain why, which I've discovered most of my Catholic family don't understand their religion. Quite honestly, yeah. I understand it so much better because when I left Catholicism, I kind of went on a quest for like, there's got to be some. I loved going to church. Mm-hmm. All that incense and, you know, prayers were just chanting in English. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure I would have loved it even more if I was around for the Latin services and stuff. And then when I found Buddhism, like, wow, look at this. They got. First thing I remember was seeing a statue of Vajrayogini. It was like, wow.
Yeah.
And my. For those of you that don't know, it's Dakini female with skulls on her head and 108 around her neck,
yeah.
holding a sword in one hand and a half a skull full of blood in the other, ready to pour it into her mouth while she's standing on two guys.
My kind of lady.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, yeah. and she's on fire and she's a wrathful deity and it's just everything about it, the skulls and the fire and the female form, everything. Just, I was like, this is amazing. What is this? And yeah. Jampa, our teacher at the time, my teacher at the time, was like, oh, look at that. And he noticed I had a bracelet on. He goes, look, you have a Vajrayogini mala. I didn't even know what a mala was. You yeah. know, this is my first time at that temple. Yeah. It was when we were just a brownstone in Brooklyn, you know. And I had this exact, I was like, wow, there's the same exact skulls. My ex had gotten it for me because she thought, oh, Tony likes skulls. I've always had I collect them. They're all over my house. I have a skull in every room. I have a Buddha in every room. And I have a Boba Fett in every room. Even in the bathroom. Great, they're great. Hiding somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, when I found that, I was like, this imagery is perfect for me. And that's when I started listening to the philosophy and going, well, the thing that was like, if it doesn't work for you, don't use it. Mm. Wow, no religion has ever, this can't be religion. Religion yeah. doesn't tell you that. That's why to me it's a philosophy. Same thing with anarchism. I mean, I would love to have that freedom. I would love for everybody to have that freedom. It's a great philosophy. Just like they say, communism sounds great on paper. I'm a commie too. You know, yeah. If you had to put me into anything, you know, I would fall into the socialist side of things for sure, but everything needs balance. You know, that's what I've learned from Buddhism, and I've had a hard time with that because I am a very extreme person. You know, I believe if you're going to do something, you do it all the way with all of your, and I still do that with whatever, but I have to find the balance in between, and that's what Buddhism brought me, you know? That
yeah.
Can I ask you talked before about how it helps you to control your mind, and what exactly about Buddhism or about any of the other ideas that you research and explore, what do you think best helps you? Is it the element of ritual? Because ritual doesn't have to be spiritual or anything like that. What is it about these that allows you to control your mind, and how has that changed your life?
Well, it's basically the meditation. I went to Buddhism, not necessarily to become a Buddhist. I went because I was like, I was having anger issues. I was having problems with my ex-wife, and you know, and it was starting. What snapped me one day was I was getting ready for work, and my youngest said something to me, blah, 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 daddy, and you know, I got annoyed and turned around. I was just like, give me a minute, and yelled, and just one single tear ran down, and I was just like, I got to do something about this anger. You know, I said to my ex, I should find a meditation class, learn how to meditate or something. And she found it, which is amazing because we're not together anymore. She found it so that I could stop being crazy and she could get the hell out. But ultimately, yeah, it was my ex-wife who found me the class, you know, so strange the way karma works. That's another thing. I got to the point where when I tried the meditation, I realized, okay, this makes sense. It calms me a little bit. It took about 6 or 8 times before I like sat out of it and went, holy crap, was I there the whole time? Like, and I realized, like, I've learned to calm myself. That was the first step. I've learned how to, like, take that nervous energy and calm myself. And the first book that Jampa offered me, Jampa is a Buddhist monk, for those of you out there in Radioland. He's now pretty big, high up in the ranks.
Yeah,
too. He's pretty much.
He's
in charge of the whole like U.S.
Yeah.
Organization of it or something. But he gave me a book called How to Solve Our Human Problems. And it was basically about how to control your anger. And it was written in, I've never read anything in such plain damn English that just, yeah, why didn't somebody say this before? Anger is me looking at something and distorting what I don't like about it to the point where I get upset. And it does nothing to change anything other than make other people upset around me because I'm upset. Yeah. That to me is the karmic thing in life.
Yeah, it's explained very well because I think that in the East, you know, what happens is that the wisdom traditions, the intellectual traditions become hidden and you have a lot of devotional bhakti and ritual, which I'm used to having grown up in a Hindu family. You know, I was used to the iconography and the devotional bhajans and rituals and pujas. But then when I came to Kanapa, you know, I found the they were bringing the what they call the yonic tradition, the intellectual, the knowledge tradition into the foreground. And that was really the attractive part, that we're able to understand through our intellect a lot of things that
you answered. Yeah. Claire's question for me very well.
Yeah.
That's the truth. Yeah. It's like what I was trying to get to is a lot of it had to do less with the meditation, but with the philosophy that went on between the meditations.
Yeah.
Like thinking about what is anger? Like I now have a definition. I can see this coming now. I know what to look for. I know the signs of what's going to make me angry, and I can see it coming. And I can remind myself, getting angry is going to hurt. My son, my 17-year-old son, went to some of the meditation classes way back when my son was my daughter. My son is trans. So when my son was about 8, went to some of the meditation for kids classes and basically learned how to meditate and would do it. I remember walking in on accident one time in the bedroom, just put clothes away or something. And there he was just meditating in front of his little Buddha in his room. Yeah. And he was like, "Dad, could you knock next time, please?" Kids are 8 years old, you know, wow. And I got really pissed off one time, not too long ago, last year. He was probably 16 at the time. And he's had some problems and stuff, but you know, he's back on the right path. He's doing great, you know, but teenagers like everybody. And, basically said to me, "Dad, you know, that whole anger thing that you got there, you know, anger's like holding onto a burning coal. You're only going to hurt yourself." And I'm like, whoa. You know, I said that to you when you were like 8. I don't even know if I was the one who said it, but I know I was taught that in Buddhism. Maybe he was taught that same thing. Mimi was his teacher.
Yeah.
Mimi was both of our classmates, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there was my son, my karma, coming back to remind me, like, that's the reason right there that I got into all this. That's the reason I said, I got to learn how to chill. And it opened up so much more to me. See, I look at the Buddhist thing and I go, I think philosophically I'm a little more Zen than I am, you know, Tibetan style.
Yeah.
But the Tibetans have the imagery that works for me. I need something in my head to go, okay, I need to generate compassion because I hate that motherfucker and I got to stop it because it's hurting me. You know what I mean? So I have a specific image I can look to for that. And they have explained, well, this image, this means that, and that means, and that works for my head. Yeah. That totally works. So once I learn that, I can look at that and automatically think compassion, which puts me. So the symbolism helps trigger and train my mind, or it still does. I mean, it continues to do it. And I've wavered where I don't meditate as much or whatever because of, I haven't in days, quite honestly, because yeah. I've had this show I just played, and I've been running around New York like a madman, and
yeah.
you know, being a rock star or whatever the hell I'm trying to be. You know?
Can I jump on the rock star bandwagon here?
Sure. Because
this, I would kind of for both of you. So I'm a poet, and I'm also a therapist, a writing therapist, and just in my research and in working with other artists. I feel like, at least in poetry, there's sort of this thing about how extremes are part of inspiration, and like the mad poet and the idea of inspiration.
I used to go by that name.
Well, yeah. Something I've been kind of in my life trying to sort of debunk that myth that creativity is madness. And I'm wondering if this sense of control and chillness and calm, how that has helped you in your art, because yeah. I think that it's a similar kind of thing. Anger and what we would call madness are energies that end up sort of spiraling.
Right.
And we can often feel in the moment like, oh, there's this power or energy beyond this thing that I can't control, and it's this thing inside me. But at the end of the day, in my research, most artists have performed better when they are in sort of a calm state.
Controlled. Yeah, well, actually, I was just saying to VJ before, he came to see me play. Thank you. Everybody
really great,
there,
amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, really
you know,
great,
the,
yeah.
the whole F-Bomb family, there's a little plug. F-Bomb is the little tribute show that goes on every month, every Saturday in Manhattan. This was the big one at the Gramercy Theater. So this, in my mind, I've played in front of more people. I've played in front of a couple thousand people when I was 19. I'm 40 some now. And I wasn't even 19. I think I was 18 when I did that. And that was nothing compared to the buzz from this, you know, because this was musicians from the New York music scene watching me, people I've gone to see, people I admire, people who I know are killer. And the people on stage with me, they're the best of the best. Of the best, in my opinion. And I'm not just saying that because some of them are my friends. They are phenomenal musicians. Once a month, they throw them 15 songs. First, you know, learn these 15 songs. 2 weeks. You got to have discipline for that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I learned 10 songs and only felt comfortable with a few. So because I had my mom sick and stuff. But going back to what you asked, I meditate usually right before I go on stage, if not right within a few minutes, just to get the jitters down, because beforehand I pace. I'll pace outside. I'll walk inside. I'll go to the bathroom 16 times and not have to go, and just all. And then when showtime comes, I can't say I'm nervous. It's not like I get butterflies. I don't get butterflies. I don't get nervous anytime I perform, and I'm not bragging. I don't understand it. I really don't. Saturday night, I went out, did this performance, and I wouldn't even have a beer before the show. And sometimes I'll have a beer, but it's like I had to be on my top game. So I meditated for 5-10 minutes, about 10 minutes before a call, you know. So it was just 20 minutes before I went on stage. So by the time I went upstairs, I was breathing normal again. I wasn't pacing. I was set to go. So I think in order to perform, as I said to you before, two beers, I feel like I play sloppy. I don't know if I do. Some guys, after two beers, go, I play better. You're not on the other side of that. You don't really know that. So I'm under the philosophy of, if I have to put on a really good show, you know, I'm gonna try to be calm beforehand. But when I get out there, I'm a fucking madman, because I'm like a hamster on a wheel on crack all the time. I just I have a very high metabolism. I don't slow down. I sleep very little. I've always been this way. You know, they probably would have put me on medication if I was born just a few years later.
Yeah.
You know, definitely would have put me on.
Does this same process also apply to if you're writing, if you're writing music, when you create from scratch, what kind of state do you like to be in?
I can't say what kind of state I like to be in. it just kind of happens.
Okay. Yeah.
So I have discovered the best stuff I've written is during the worst points of my life.
Mm-hmm.
When I went through my divorce, which lasted 15 years, when I went through, well, not quite that long, but breakups, things like that. That's when all of a sudden I'm writing. Because I write, too. When I was 20, another thing, I don't know if I even mentioned, we've known each other how long. When I was 25, I published my own poetry book. Have you seen it?
No, no.
I'll give you, I had 100 copies made, and they're all numbered, and everybody I give it to, I write. I got one to Johnny Cash, and he read it. Oh, my God. Cool. I was like, I can die now. He's a hero, you know? Strange, you know, Johnny Cash and Johnny Ramone, you know? But, you'd be surprised how similar they are. Now I lost my train of thought because I thought about the Ramones, you know? That's I also had a discussion the other night about how the Ramones could totally save the world and bring world peace, but that's a totally different tangent for another day.
But also, I think that the meditation is also the meditative path of, like, integrating in all of our energies into, like, a way in which we can express it normally in usually it's like a build up, and then discharge.
Right.
And then we have when we have that moment of inspiration or madness or whatever it is, it's like that's a discharge of what's been building up, you know, previously before. Whereas like meditative path and meditation allows us to channel that energy so that we can express it regularly in a normal way, I feel like. You know?
Yeah, I think you can tell probably in the things you write. I mean, I've read your book. I have your book. I've read other stuff, you know, throughout the years, and sometimes you can just read something and go, whoa, they weren't feeling really good when they wrote that. You know, you can hear it. And I can see that in my stuff. What I tend to do, and I left it sitting in the car. I was writing right before I came in here. I have one of those little moleskin books. I actually have up to 6 of them because I'm always losing them. So I have a bunch of them that are years old, and they have all different dates in them because I'm just ADHD all over the place. And I write in it, and I will put it away. I date it. I always put a date at the top. A lot of times I'll put the time I start writing it. And then when I'm done, I'll write the time I'm done and put it a line. That's just my little thing. And I won't look at what I wrote for a week.
Yeah.
And I'll go back and go, I wrote that? I really don't even recall the words coming out. Like I said to you before, when I perform, if I'm performing with my guitar in a band, I'm paying attention to what I'm playing, paying attention to cues. So I'm taking all these. I don't hear what it sounds like. I hear a different version of it. And it's the similar thing. You know, it's very similar. And as you can see, my brain is very scattered. So meditation brings it together. When it comes to writing stuff, you can tell if, wow, he was very focused when he wrote this. Yeah. You know, like, wow, where the hell was his brain when he wrote this? And he was really sad when he wrote this. You know, I don't think you can fake that. And I think people know if you fake
it. The emotional landscape has to be real.
Right. So if you read a love song, I was probably in love when I wrote it. You know, if you hear the scathing breakup song, it's probably, that's my method. You know what I mean? Because that's all I know. So I think I work good with both extremes and calm, you know, it produces different things. It's taking the negativity of the extreme. And that's what I try to do now and go, let me focus this on my guitar. And this is one of the reasons I'm getting off Facebook in the next week or so, because I haven't really said it to even most of my friends and family, but I'm going to be putting together a portfolio. I'm going to start going casting calls and trying to get acting jobs. I've been for a year now doing voiceover auditions and stuff, for all kinds of fun. And I figured, you know what? I didn't think I could do a lot. Like, people, what makes you I think of what my mom, my stepmom, however you want to look at it. I just don't think I can't do it at this point. So sure, I'm going to try this. I'm having to use the discipline to push away Facebook.
Distractions,
right. So I can now go, I need to produce art. I need to take, I got crap in my head that people need to hear. Whether or not they want to hear it, there are people out there that do. And the people that don't, fuck them. You know, they don't have to listen. You know? But I've discovered, I don't understand why, that some people like what I do. And I don't even know what it is I really do, because I do so much crap. Whatever it is I can do, I've done Rocky Horror. I've sang it and performed it as Dr. Frankenfurter in full drag. You know, I'm an old school punk rock metalhead who plays in a 20s through 40s band. I record all kinds of music. I'm in an acoustic, sort of a Luciferian kumbaya band. I don't know.
So I was supposed to say about the Zen thing, connecting it back, the non-judgmental, and like being able to observe and see what's going on in a kind of non-judgmental way. I got caught up in the drama. I caught up in the clinging to this is so depressing. This is so great. This is so, not the extremes, but rather being able to see what it is for what it is.
And right.
That's also what I'm kind of getting from what you're saying is that
perspective. Kind of,
yeah,
too.
Perspective. Yeah.
That's something, and it shouldn't, for all the Buddhist teachings that it's given me. Perspective is something that Buddhism has given me tremendously.
Yeah.
And I think it's those things, road rage, back when I had road rage. And again, my son just said it recently because he's going through some, you know, like basic mindfulness therapy type things. And he's throwing these things at me like, you know, oh, you can't get mad at the guy cutting you off. Who knows? You know, maybe he's rushing to the hospital for his yeah. kid. And I was like, that was the example I used to use for myself. Because
yeah.
I used to be the guy that if you cut me off, I would chase you down.
Yeah.
And I mean, I would beat my horn behind you. And if you got out of the car, I'd get out of the car. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't care if my kids were in the, like, that's how bad I was getting. So the mindfulness of, you know, my kid bringing that back to me again, saying, you know, like, you know, mindfulness is something, I'm mindful of my surroundings, Dad. Mm-hmm. You got to be mindful of your surroundings and the perspective of other people that they don't see it the way you see it. So maybe you got to stop and try to see it from their point of view. Mm-hmm. You know, like maybe that guy is just an asshole, but you know what? Again, if I get mad at him for cutting me off, I'm only hurting myself and then probably endangering people on the road, yeah. you know? So try to see it from a different perspective where maybe that person just needs to go, let him go, yeah. you know? So, and then I see my other friends with their set perspective, which most people have. I mean, me too. I have it in so many ways. And I try to get them to see it another way and they just can't or they won't or whatever. And it's frustrating to me because that's one of my things is I always try to see from everybody's point of view. And that's yeah. kind of why I feel like I can get along with almost anybody unless they really hate me because I try to see it from their point of view. You know, everybody has got something to contribute.
You know, they say about, you know, seeing you believe it, but also if you believe something, you'll see it. So I think that what your kind of the constructs or the frameworks in which you're coming from will be what you see in the world. So I think that's something to say about
it.
The
mind,
yeah. The mind creates everything. It's
right.
The creator of everything. Yeah.
Right. And again, yeah. you see, going back to what I said before, I don't take all those things to be literal.
Yeah.
Like people have said that to me, like, well, your Buddhism says your mind just creates this and nothingness. And it's like, yeah. no, you see, you haven't really studied yeah. what it said. You yeah. know, emptiness. God, that we could do a whole series about that. But What was the term you just said?
Just that when you see things, when you believe something, you'll see it.
Right.
So
right.
also, like with a ice cube tray, for example, I was thinking about this analogy. Like, you know, you use the ice cube tray to create the ice. You know, you don't like fixate on the ice cube tray. You're trying to get the ice. You know, so like any framework of understanding is to create the realizations that you're reaping. So it's like you're really focused on the realization, the experience of your, you know, the ice or functionally how you're using it. And the experience, life experiences you're putting in, you're getting the realizations out of that framework. But the framework is not as important as...
Right. So perspective of all that. And I use the book one a lot of times, too, with people when they don't understand what I'm talking about from the different perspectives and what is emptiness. That's kind of what taught me perspective is the Buddhist concept of emptiness, which doesn't mean we don't exist, you know? It's again, more of a symbolic thing to me that, you know, just you have to understand that you only perceive it this way because that's the way you were brought up. You know, I try to remember that certain people, even those that are in high levels of government, were just raised knowing nothing but being a rich, spoiled fucking brat. You know what I mean? Like, oh, here's $3 million. Yeah. Oh, is that all I get, Daddy? I'm gonna do something all by myself with this $3 million you've gave me. You know what I mean? Like when you're brought up in that world and you're sheltered, like Siddhartha, you know, never let outside of the castle grounds to see the starving and the poor, and you're just told they're starving and poor because they're dumb or they're lazy or what. If that's all you're fed your whole life, I'm going to think you're an asshole, but it's not necessarily your fault.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that it also goes back to the when you believe it, you see it kind of thing. Because, and this is something that for artists is very important too, because one thing that I notice about assholes in general is that
I am one, by the way.
Well, you don't stink as much as other assholes. So, but there's this, we perpetuate our own belief systems, and it's really difficult to have new experiences.
Definitely.
And it closes us off to the world. And I think part of what people forget is we're not going to like every experience we have, but we have to be open to having them if we're ever going to change and get out of a writer's block or just learn and move forward. Learning is painful, and we have to allow ourselves to change, to overcome being so attached to our beliefs that we lose sight of the other things around us that might be totally new and might be horrible, but at the same time, our beliefs can grow and change, and we don't lose them if we just set them aside and look at something else for a little while.
That is perfect. And while you were saying that, I was just doing the analogy again of this is why I'm leaving Facebook.
Yeah.
Because of the algorithms.
Yeah.
Basically doing what you said. They're giving me what I believe.
Feedback loop.
Just, right. Yeah. It's just telling me, yeah, Tony, you're right about all that bullshit.
Yeah.
And some of that bullshit, if all of my friends think this band sucks, I'm probably never even going to listen to that band. And I might love that band because I listened to Die Antwoord. I decided I have no more guilty pleasures. Fuck that. I'm over 40. If I like something, I like it. If all of my friends think it sucks, don't listen to it. Yeah. This is my car. Maybe I'll be nice and I won't put it on. But, you know.
Right, but why not? They'll never hear it otherwise.
Right,
They can kind of, you know, not be entertained. We don't always have to be entertained. And that's another thing that Facebook and just social media and our attachment to all of these electronic things. It's like we're always looking for outside entertainment. And if we're uncomfortable mentally for more than 4 minutes at a time, it's like, let me change the screen.
Oh, now. Yeah. We don't. 4 minutes. Wow. So, you know,
I'm an optimist.
Very. You're the optimist. Some people have called me a pessimist. I'm just a realist, you know.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, realism seems a little pessimistic at times, but I try to put the optimist mystic spin on it. Yeah.
Except that if you're open to things, I feel like that fosters optimism, because pessimism in reality, good things do happen.
Oh, every
day. And yeah.
Every
so
day.
It's always strange to me that there's, to me, the default is kind of optimism, because even if you are in a totally miserable place, it's something good happening is sort of as likely as something bad happening often. And we have a lot of power over that.
Right.
So if we expect
bad
things,
we can control whether or not we're pissed.
Right. And we can control how the energy we put out into the world. But basically, there are things that we can always do to improve our situation. And they might be big and they might be small, but I think, is what the term empowering is. It's when we realize that we have agency.
Music, right. Music, mm-hmm. art, art saves. And it's true. Honestly, I've been playing guitar. I started taking lessons when I was 6. I got, this is my acoustic over here, but I have an electric Stratocaster, the one I played at the show that, and I've had that since I was 8 years old. Okay, like I've been playing guitar for a long, long time. And over those, I forgot the point I was getting at.
Music saves.
Right.
Art saves.
And it has saved my life. It literally has saved my life. There have been times where I felt like I had nothing. Like my dad died and, you know, like whatever, whether it was breakups or I did something bad and, you know, hurt one of my friends or I'm all alone and in a strange city. My guitar was always there. If you ever heard that Billy Joel / Ray Charles song.
No, is that slash or backslash?
Backslash. the Ray Charles Billy Joel song, Baby Grand. It's about how their piano is always there for them. And that was my guitar. It saved my life, having that spirituality. That's what that was for me. When I was before Buddhism, when I was just an agnostic, you know, like I didn't have ritual. and I longed for it. And I didn't even know I longed for it until I had it again. It's like the chanting and the statues. And now I can do my own rituals at home. And yeah. when I need it, I can go to it. But it's not forced on me like Catholicism felt. Like, here's the numbered envelope you put your weekly donation in. It can, you don't have to use it, right? But you're right. Keeping track of the numbers, right? You know, things like that. So, your next question before I take up. I'll take up the whole day.
We'll get to a song, but I just want to say.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to be like, we've been talking about music now.
Right.
I just want to quickly say one quick thing. That, I think there are limits to how much, you know, you're talking about perspective and how in the show you have a different realization opposed to the audience. So there's all limits to how much we know about what's best for us and how our thinking can dead end. So sometimes those breakthrough moments when they cause suffering or those painful moments can be breakthrough moments where we achieve a different way of thinking about the problem. We can't keep doing the same thing over and over again and expect different results.
So right.
Einstein said that.
I know exactly what you're saying. Right. Yeah. It's one of those things where, right, you have to. New experiences.
Yeah.
And if you have to take something bad and make it good.
Yeah.
And that's what I try my best to do with everything. You know, I try to have that perspective of, well, the car broke down and I don't have any money, but I'm healthy. My kids are healthy. I just saw my kids, you know, like, okay, I got this going. I try to do that. It doesn't work.
Sometimes they'll open up, but let's listen to a song now. Why don't we go to the song? Yeah.
Well,
we haven't been, we need this entertainment because it's been over 4 minutes and play for us, please.
Oh my God. I already lost my, see, I always tell everybody, I have a 7-year-old guitar student and she is, there it is. I explained to her.
This studio, by the way, is cursed for guitar picks, apparently.
Yeah, I know.
That's everything.
So it's not your fault. There are just gremlins and trolls in here.
When you drop a guitar pick, it goes to the same place that all the left socks go in the washer. It's like there's a vortex or something that opens up somewhere between here and the floor and it disappears.
Car keys, too, in there. Yeah.
I keep them chained to me. My wallet's usually chained to me. That's the kind
of
person
you need to invent a pick chain.
That would be a good idea. I actually had something to stick out. Let me take a sip of this because I've been talking a lot. I've been awake a lot. And as I was telling VJ, I sang lead vocals on Saturday.
Yeah.
First time I ever sang in front of anybody without a guitar in my hand. I don't remember it. I remember walking out and I just remember all the crap that went through my head for the 4 seconds walking up to that microphone. Like, I've never done this before. I'm used to having a guitar in my hand. Am I the kind of singer that holds the mic? Am I the kind of singer that plays with the mic stand? Do I use the mic stand? All this in seconds was going through my head. And I'm like, I better put the mic stand away or I'm going to hurt myself. That's the kind of guy I am. I'll be the guy that tries to do some Mick Jagger thing, come back, split my head open with the microphone, pass out in front of 500 people. You know, that would be my luck. So I'm like, just get everything away from me. But again, perception.
Yeah.
I walked out with my rock and roll and my confidence. All those people not knowing this is the first time he's ever done this shit, you know? I've got the first 3 lines of, you know, every verse written on a piece of paper that I put down next to my water, and that's behind the monitor. The crowd can't see that. So from their perspective, I know what the hell I'm doing. But from my perspective, I'm faking this. You know what I mean? And it went well. But again, the perspective thing of it was a totally different thing for me than from the other side. And since I've been on the other side, I can understand that. Most of those people in the crowd haven't seen my perspective, may never see my perspective. I can explain it to them. But when you do that with certain things, it kind of kills the magic. You know, it's like, you know, explaining how Dumbo flies or something. You know, you just don't do those things. Well, when you had told me that I could play, I was like, okay, this is great. What am I going to play? Because I've been learning all these other songs. That's a different cue in my head. That's the 12 songs I learned in 3 weeks and then disposed of and never remember. Like the songs I played on Saturday, I have no clue how to play them today. No clue. They were in my head for 3 weeks. They're gone.
Yeah.
You know, my original band, Peaches and Crime, we have 42 originals, 45 original songs. I still use chord sheets and stuff because there's only 12 notes and there's 45 songs. So I'm going to get them mixed up because I'm also learning these songs and I'm in this. So I tend to always have like some sort of little cheat sheet on stage. And I personally don't care if people see it. You know, yeah. Billy Joel sat in front of me and performed with a book of his lyrics saying, like, you know, I've written a lot of songs over 30 years. I can't keep them first verse versus third. So I always have my phone or something here. And I'm going to hope that because I have not even tried. I haven't warmed up or anything, which is fine because I'm a professional, right? This is what I said about faking it. But I haven't performed this song in months. But when Vijay said, hey, you know, a song, is like, what song kind of sums me up? And I never thought about that. Other than I want Rain Dogs and not Jockey Full of Bourbon. Now it's eluding me. Another Tom Waits song played at my funeral. I consider Rain Dogs to be like one of my like
Christmas card from a hooker in Minneapolis. Maybe
I just started learning that. I know more Tom Waits and Johnny Cash songs than any other artists. Like they're my two favorites.
Tom Waits is my hero.
He is my songwriting genius hero. Mm-hmm. I love. If I would have known that, I would have thought of a Tom Waits song.
Oh, that's okay.
I do a slow, painful version of "I Don't Want to Grow Up," which that becomes a very sad song when you slow it down.
Yeah,
and that's something my ex used to say to me. She's like, "No, I like your music. It's just all so sad." I said, "But sad songs make me feel better. I get it out. It's that
cathartic,
right? Yeah. It's that like that using process, the negative to make the positive, you know. Yeah. And sometimes when you're in the negative, you got to feed it a little to get the positive. And that's like, you know, if I'm in a bad mood or I'm in a sad mood, if I play a sad song, instead of getting sadder, I feel better, you know. So it kind of works in a polar way. But the song I thought of immediately was like, what sums me up? Because we were talking about, you know, Buddhism and my atheism and how I'm an anarchist by theory, you know, realistic. I have to participate in the democracy, you know, because it's there. Anarchy's not going to be here tomorrow, but the philosophies behind it, I can get behind and I can try to teach and apply those however I can. Same thing with Buddhism, same thing with anything, with music, with whatever. And I thought, like, when I was at Occupy Wall Street, I was one of those crazy bastards too, you know, I remember the only sign I ever made. I wasn't a sign guy. I wasn't one of the guys that held a sign. The only sign I ever made was lyrics from, and of all things, a Bruce Springsteen song, which Rage Against the Machine had covered. I liked Springsteen, and Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine is just one of an amazing guitarist that I've always loved and tried to emulate at one point. And the song is The Ghost of Tom Joad, which is it The Grapes of Wrath? Tom Joad is...
Tom Joad, yeah, I think it's...
Yeah, The Grapes of Wrath, right?
So, yeah.
And I'm like, that was... actually, I got the lyrics here because, like I said, I always have a bad time remembering lyrics. But what I had written, and I think it's a very important line, it's about how you will see things from a different perspective, how you can look at somebody who's starving and see me in that. Yeah. Because I'm going to be there with that person, standing with them to help them. And it's a song about compassion, I think, in my opinion. It's a song about caring, but it's also that song about, like, I'll stick my neck out even if I don't know you sort of thing. And that's kind of what I try to do, like, in life, sort of.
Stick your neck out-ism.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how well... Here, let me see if I can... Just talk for a minute while I adjust myself, EJ.
Yeah.
That sounded so bad.
Yeah, use your imagination, listener.
Woo! Okay, yeah, all adjusted there. Okay, now I want to be able to have some lyrics rolling through here, so because I will forget lyrics. I haven't had much sleep this weekend. Like I said, I had a huge show. I spent all day yesterday with my son, which was great. We went and visited my grandmother, who's in a home out in Long Island. I went and visited my former bass player, who I consider my brother. So I've had long days. I'm tired. I'm not practiced, but I'm going to do this anyway because I'm a professional. And I'm an artist. And that's something I've only just accepted. Like, I'm an artist. I'm a songwriter.
Yeah.
You know, I write songs. I never thought I was, only because, again, perspective.
Yeah.
Once I decided I can sing, holy shit, I sang lead vocals at the Gramercy Theater the other night. Because a year ago, I was like, no, I can do that. And they're like, okay. And I was like, what the fuck did I just do? You know, like, they heard me singing when he's good enough. You know, and we got to this point. They're like, you can do a song. I couldn't believe it. Because as I said, I'm looking at all these great musicians in F-Bomb, and they're phenomenal. How the hell am I up here with them? You know, how did I fake it that good that I got up here? They put me on these stage thinking I'm even close to these people. You know what I mean? So here's me giving you my rendition of the last minute definition of Tony.
Sure, sure.
Let's see how it goes. Can you hear that right there?
Yeah.
Let's see how loud my... Men walk along the railroad tracks, going someplace and there's no going back. Highway patrol chopper coming up over the ridge, hot soup and a campfire under the bridge. Shelter line stretching around the corner. Welcome to the new world order. Families sleeping in their cars in the southwest. No home, no job, no peace, no rest. Well, the highway is alive tonight. Nobody's kidding nobody about where it goes. I'm sitting down here in the campfire light, searching for the ghost of Tom Jones. See the problems I have live? Here he goes. He pulls a prayer book out of his sleeping bag. The preacher lights up a bud and takes a drag. Waiting for the last shall be first and the first shall be last. In a cardboard box near the underpass. Got a one-way ticket to the promised land. With a horn in your belly and a gun in your hand. Sleeping on a pillow of solid rock. Bathing in the city's aqueducts. Well, the highway is alive tonight. Nobody's fooling nobody about where it goes. I'm sitting down here in the campfire light, waiting on the ghost of Tom Jones. Now Tom said, Mom, wherever there's a cop beating a guy, wherever a hungry newborn baby cries, where there's a fight against the blood and hatred in the air, look for me, Mom, I'll be there. Wherever somebody's fighting for a place to stand, for a decent job or a helping hand, wherever somebody is struggling to be free, look in their eyes, Ma, you'll see me. Look in their eyes, Ma, you'll see me. Look in their eyes, Ma, you'll see me. Well, the highway is alive tonight. Everybody's knowing where it goes. But I'm sitting down here in the campfire lights, waiting on the ghost of Tom Jones. Well, the highway is alive tonight. Nobody knows where it goes. I'm sitting down here in the campfire light, with the ghost of old Tom Jones. With the ghost of old Tom Jones.
Thank you.
That's again. That's like with no sleep, no warm up, and I haven't honestly played that song in, oh God, months. I don't even really know. But when you said that, I was like, oh, that would be the song, I think, because that it was that last verse that I had written on that sign, wherever there's a cop beating a guy, wherever. No, actually, no, it was the second part. When somebody's fighting for a place to stand, for a decent job or a helping hand, when somebody's struggling to be free, look in their eyes, Ma, you'll see me.
That's great.
That's sort of also like, here's me trying to help other people to enlightenment, if you want to use that kind of word, you know, like, and yeah, that's pretty arrogant of me to say in some ways, but you know, all of my socio-political views are not right for everybody.
But I think that definitely we have artists creating symbols that we can meditate on, that we have artists as the new gurus or whatever, or gurus that we can look them on and have that relationship where we look at their writings as symbols for meditation and symbols that we can really, you know, take to heart. I know John Steinbeck's at the end, you know, the build up in Grapes of Wrath to the end where he's like, you know, is very powerful, and using that in this song, you know, the artist using this song is like, it amplifies the certain aspects, you know, how
and it kind of also with the fake it till you make it thing. I mean, if we even, if in our head we're kind of like, wow, the world sucks and I hate everybody, if you fake being nice to people, you're still kind of being nice to
you
people.
Are being
people. And we aspire to things.
From
so
their
by saying, yeah, exactly. But when we aspire to be better people, when we say, okay, this is great, I wish I were that person who is the helpful one, who I wish I were this person who whom I am so proud of, then if we act like that, we become that person.
Yeah.
Are you Buddhist?
How we co-create the world is very much, at the very least, if we can't see how we create the world, we see how we co-create the world. So when we think, oh, you know, I'm this or I'm that, we're actually putting that energy out there and we're manifesting that. You know?
Right. You know, actually, again, my other band, Peaches and Crime, now all I do is really play guitar, mandolin, banjo. I just got a banjo. It's just basically a guitar with a banjo body. It's don't have to learn a new instrument, you know, but same thing, but sounds like a banjo. And I do background vocals, but the lead vocalist writes all the music, and her husband, who's like the MC, because we're this big troupe. We do also do murder mysteries and burlesque, you know, original murder mysteries. I just got the new script. So this is, I think that's, I'm not sure when we're going to perform that. But they write the stuff and I perform it. But we have a song called Self-Made Man.
Yeah.
And the way Daniel, who goes as Danny Black, we all have pseudonyms in Peaches and Crime. I'm Muggsy the Greek. I'm supposed to be like an old school rum runner. Like, wait, oh, that worked. Collection agent, you know, so to speak. Wow, that knuckle thing worked. He always says about the great myth. This song is about the great myth of something that doesn't exist, which is the self-made man, because nothing, no one can do anything without everything else. Everything is interconnected in some way.
Yeah.
You know, that goes back to the emptiness.
Yeah, and the Buddhist, that we didn't even have a self. Like, we're just
right,
not
there is
self.
No I.
Yeah.
There's no I. There's no spoon, you know?
We think about the higher self, but then we realize the ultimate higher self is that the disappearance of the self, the disappearance of the ego, of the individual identity separate from the whole, you know?
Right. And you can't be without
everyone else.
Without everyone else, you know? Like, even if you want to be.
Yeah.
You know, people, well, I, blah, blah. Yeah, right. You know, you didn't kill the cow that, you know, that you're eating, and you didn't build the building that you're living in. And so, no, you could not survive on your own.
Yeah.
You know, like,
we're
you need.
Yeah.
Right. And, in the closer units of friends and family and stuff like that, we do feed off of one another.
Yeah.
Because, you know, whether it's with friends or with lovers or whatever, I'm sure we've all felt that when we're with certain people, certain emotions come. And
they say that you can tell who you are by who you associate with. So that's also kind of part of it, because you're created by the people you associate with. How who you are, it comes like, you know, part of that, because you can't separate the two, you know?
That must be why I have like multiple personalities going on. Like I was saying before, like, I could be friends with just about anybody, you know? And I like that, because I think even that asshole, I got something to learn from him. Every time I play with anybody, they can be somebody who doesn't know anything. I'm going to learn something, whether it's through me teaching them or... So anytime I play an instrument with somebody, I'm learning something by trying to take on their perspective or something to that degree.
And like you were talking about with your son, sometimes when we are with people who are supposedly novice in something we already know, they remind us of the basics that we can forget.
I've always said he's the emanation of Buddha for me. You know, he's the one that's there to kick me in the, like, that's the reason I started meditating. You know, he's the one that brings up every now and then, hey, Dad, you're being a schmuck. You're right. Sorry, Dad, you're right.
And it's a perfect illustration of the karmic loop because, you know, like what you're putting out is revisiting you later. And in this way, positive loop, you know, you're putting out some positive energy and then he's gifting it to you later as positive energy, you know?
And that's like the karmic thing again, where I don't believe in the literal thing. It's like if I kill a bug, that I don't believe it's literally going to mean that I'm going to be reborn as a bug and somebody's going to kill me, you know, like particularly the whatever, the mind or soul that was in that bug is going to have to kill me, but something, and it'll all work. I don't believe in it that literally.
That's like grasping at specifics, almost assuming that all these things really exist independent of your mind, but actually it's all meshed up into the mind, you know?
Right, so, exactly. So it's like, that's just, that's oops, my guitar. Yeah. that's, you know, a way to look at it. That's,
oh, we have 4 minutes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was 58 for a second.
Oh. There goes train of thought. Yeah. Let the station out. Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. I get distracted easy. Oh, look, a chicken. That's what happens when I told you I'm at that age where I look at all my friends, and the ones that are a little bit older are all on medication because we're getting older, and all the ones that are younger are on medication for ADHD. And it's like, if I was born, probably just they would have been shoving pills down my throat. So I'm glad they didn't, because I might not have become the crazy musician and have this energy that I have to do these things. Like when I was running a business and going to Buddha classes, and I was in a band and raising two kids and had a wife, and that's a lot of shit.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm 40, whatever, and I still do it. So, I think it's all helped me because
it's all been there for a reason.
I've learned to focus it. You know?
Become the product of what has happened and a very good product.
You know, and the karmic thing, if you act like an asshole, people are going to treat you like an asshole.
Yeah.
And if you're nice, that doesn't mean you're always going to have everything nice, you know? Yeah. But if you look at it that way, you know, like, how could you not be mad that guy cut you off? He's getting the better. No, I win because I'm not upset. Me getting pissed off isn't going to help me. Mm. Anyway, so, the karmic thing is, not literal at all to me. There's the atheist in me killing the Buddhist, you know?
Yeah,
We can look at any kind of teaching as all just a mental exercise, something to reflect on. And by questioning things, we still learn from them.
Question everything. And I've said that to my kids, and it's rough when your kids are growing up and you teach them to be independent thinkers, and, you know, and you teach them that, you know, look, I don't believe in God or this or that, but when my kid wanted to go to church, go for it. You know, you want to go to synagogue with your friend, go for it. Done all that, you know, been to Buddhist stuff with me, kind of has an idea of where he is spiritually now. That's cool. Everybody has their own thing. Just don't shove it down my fucking throat. You know what I mean? Like, that's the other thing about Buddhism, real quick before you got to go, is that it's not a preaching religion.
Yeah.
I'm not a preaching guy. You want to talk about it? I'll talk about anything. As you can tell, I will talk about anything you want to talk about. If you're going to be offended by it, don't bring it up, because I'll talk about it. You know what I mean? If you want to know how I feel about religion, I will tell you, no holds barred. But Buddhism doesn't say you have to believe this. It says, if you want to, take from it what you need, you know?
I think it's very tailored to like medicine, tailored to the individual's path on the journey. So that if you're in this position, then you need this kind of technique or teaching. But if you're in another position, sometimes the opposite technique or teaching might be helpful for you.
Exactly,
right. So that's a great place. I'm going to do a couple quick announcements. Today is 9:10, so Ben Talks Live is happening in the Pine Box Rock Shop. So if you want to join another show doing a live weekly talk show, Ben Talks, in front of a live audience, they'll be giving their unfiltered, hilarious, and sometimes controversial opinions about the latest trending topics. You can go to bentalkslive.eventbrite.com. Also, Radio Free Brooklyn is proud to announce that we have been partially funded to start an after-school program for local teenagers.
Woo.
So definitely check out radiofreebrooklyn.org/afterschool. So cool. So this has been Radio Free Brooklyn.
One quick plug.
Yeah, go ahead.
Facebook.com/... Peaches and Crime, /Tony3Official. That's III. Three is in Roman numeral. That's me personally. Plus, I'm also Radii, R-A-D-I-I. And what the heck's the other one? Jack Punktree and the Urban Hillbillies. I got my pedals in all those. And Come to an F-Bomb if you're in New York every Saturday. Last week,